We all know the story of Jesus Christ and why Easter is celebrated. Jesus was crucified on the cross, and then his body is there in the stone chamber. After 3 days, they find, 3 or 2 days, they find that body is not there. Jesus is resurrected. So that is celebrated as Easter. But what we will see today is, firstly, this is not of Christian origin at all. It's pre-Christian and was celebrated by ancient traditions, many of them, in many different stories, rituals, ceremonies. And we will pick up just a few of those symbols and try to understand what could be the meaning. These are all very symbolical, meaningful stories. Though the crucifixion and resurrection is not of Christian origin, yet the Christian theology has borrowed it from ancient traditions, and we find that it's very meaningful. For example, look at the cross. The nails that are used to crucify Jesus, he is put in a stone chamber. Then the stone, the rock that is there, which closes the chamber, is moved aside, and then he is resurrected. All these are, keep these images in mind, and we'll try to find out what the meaning could be. The etymology of Easter, some scholars say, comes from Ostara, the god of spring. That Ostara comes from Aves, to shine, which comes from Greek Eos, which is traced to the Hindu, the Sanskrit Ushas, light. So Easter, or the festival of spring equinox, was celebrated in ancient world for ages. And Christianity, or rather the Christian fathers who are setting up their theology, they borrowed these various traditions and then built their version of it. So spring is a period of renewal, right? There is a coldness of winter, where the nature kind of shrinks, bitter cold, and nature has shed all its leaves. And because, you know, the warmth of the sun is reducing over the 6 months in its southern journey, therefore there is more and more coldness in the northern hemisphere. In the southern, it's the opposite. And then during the December 21st time, the winter solstice, it is as if sun is in a balance. And he sees for 2-3 days, should I go southwards, should I go northwards? If he goes further south, then all life perishes on earth. But he decides to go northward, which is Uttarayana, sun's northern journey, where there is more light and infusion of vitality, and then all nature comes back to life. So spring is a period of celebration, resurrection, renewal, rebirth. This was recognized all across in the ancient traditions. And the Easter also is celebrated, is decided, or used to be decided, the day of Easter, based on the first full moon, the Sunday following the first full moon day after the spring equinox. That was the connection that used to be there. The ancient traditions regarding the spring equinox is you find everywhere. Some small references are there. The Scandinavians, they used to have this egg worship. And the Norsemen, it said, even today, exchange colored eggs during this period. Egg is a very very significant symbol. We will see what it could be in a few moments. In the Persian system, they call their new year begins after the spring equinox or during the spring equinox, and they call it Navaroz. Now comes from the Sanskrit Nava, new. Rose is day, right? Hindi also rose, right? Day. So Navaroz was the beginning, is the beginning of the year for them. And it's one of the significant, most important festivals, this Navaroz. We have our Yugadi, right? During the same time, Samvatsaradi, beginning of the new year. They had their Navaroz. And interestingly, one of the important rituals or a kind of practice that is there among Persians is called spring cleaning, the cleaning of the house. They call it in their language Khone Tikhoni, which means shaking the house, shaking the house. And mostly they buy new clothes, purchase flowers. It's a day of celebration for them. Interestingly, the Wednesday before Navruz, they call it the Fire Wednesday, the festival of fire. And this they mark as a celebration of the triumph of light over darkness. You see that in the journey of the earth around the sun, there is more and more darkness in its sun's southern journey. So winter comes, there's coldness, less and less light. So the night is the longest and day becomes shortest. From then onwards, the sun starts moving upwards. And during the spring, the whole earth is celebrating that revival of sun, S-U-N, the resurrection of sun. The sun is buried, but he is not dead. The winter, during the winter, the coldness, sun appears as if he is gone during the 25th, December 21st to 25th. But he resurrects, he comes back. That is one of the meanings of this resurrection. Symbolical meaning. And look at this festival of fire that the Persians celebrate, Zoroastrians, it is celebrated on the day of Wednesday. Wednesday is Buddha, Buddhi, again wisdom. And it is the spiritual wisdom and the cleaning of the house. What is this house? Our body and the mind is the house in which dwells the Lord, in which dwells our real self, which is us. And cleaning of the house, because it's full of ignorance and passion, cleaning, renewal has to happen. So it's a very important thing. And even in Judaism, we find this metaphor of moving from darkness to light, asat to sat, tamas to jyotir. They celebrate this during spring equinox. They call it the Passover. If you know the story of Exodus, you will realize this is the foundation myth of Israel, actually. That the people of Israel who were there in bondage in Egypt were liberated by Moses through the will of the God, and they there is an exodus from Egypt towards other countries. And therefore, it's a celebration of this Passover, of from bondage to liberation. So this bondage to liberation, darkness to light, death to life, from winter to the spring, all this seems to be interrelated. And of course, we have our Yugadi, as already mentioned, the beginning of the new year, a new beginning, a new age. And this symbol of egg, which is so famous in Easter, it's called Easter egg, right? Again, it's a borrowed symbol of the Scandinavian and the Norsemen traditions. And egg is found in almost all cosmogonies. In the Hindu system, it was the Brahma gestating in the egg. And some traditions say it was during the springtime that the egg broke and then Brahma came out of it. But look at the symbol egg. You take the egg of any bird, crow, sparrow, hawk, eagle. The egg that it lays, when it hatches, it gives birth to a same kind of bird. A crow's egg will not give rise to a sparrow bird, right? So there is this mathematical connection between cause and effect, which the egg symbolizes. In other words, it's a symbol that our life, the present life, is the exact outcome of our past existences. If we find it filled with sorrow and others troubling us and taking us for a ride, cheating us, or some kind of disappointment and so on, where did this chick come from? From the egg that we have laid in the past. So if it is full of sorrow, let us realize that we have sown the causes in the past. Similarly, the opportunities, the happiness, the contentment, the peace, the prosperity that we find, for which we have to be so grateful in life, also are the causes that we have set in the past. So it speaks of this, if you analyze it, it refers to this symbol of, so this teaching of karma, cause and effect. Right? And again, look at this. Egg gives rise to the bird. Bird lays again the egg. Egg again gives rise to the bird. It's a cycle of eternity, beginningless, endless. It's like the bird phoenix. You know about the bird phoenix, right? It grows to a certain age and then suddenly consumes in fire, burns itself to ashes, and then from that ash again that new young phoenix arises. So it's beginningless, endless. It only appears as if it has burnt itself to ashes, but it renews itself again. Again, similar to the symbol of Earth's cyclic rotation around the sun and the cyclic renewal of seasons, celebrated as the spring. And third and the final meaning that we can, final in the sense of this discussion, meaning that we can find in the egg is, the egg always has an outer shell and an inner sense. Nobody eats the outer shell. It's the inner essence which is important, right? Similarly in man also, there is his outer body, the senses, which is just a mere outer crust, the ring. But inside that is the essence of man. Also in the scriptures, all the holy scriptures that we read it blindly, sectarian, with sectarian lens. You're only eating the outer shell, but there is an inner hidden spirit which has to be found. And the more the man finds the spirit within himself, the more he'll be able to decipher the spirit in the scriptures, and the vice versa also. So this is some ideas about the symbol of egg. But it was, this spring equinox was much more than mere celebration. It has deep philosophical meaning. You see that all these cosmic events had traditions and festivals woven around them. And they always signified through various stories, myths, allegories and festivals. They may appear very funny to us and story-like for us, but in deep hidden inside them, when you can decipher, that is, when you can remove the shell of those allegories and stories and myths and go to the roots of it, you will find great truths hidden about the nature of man, his purpose, his destiny and so on. Vital truths about man are hidden in it. The ancients built architectural wonders, just a couple of them in relation to spring equinox and therefore to Easter will be mentioned now. One is in Mexico, in Chichen Itza. There is a pyramid It's called the pyramid of Kukulkan, if the pronunciation is right. It's very interesting how they have built this pyramid. There are four staircases leading to the top of the pyramid, four sides of the pyramid, right? And on the northern staircase, if you look at it on the day of the equinox, there are two equinoxes, right? Vernal equinox, spring equinox, and autumnal equinox. On that particular day, you will find on that staircase as if a serpent is descending from the staircase. They have built the staircase, the pyramid, and aligned it with astronomical knowledge. These Mayans have built it in such a way that on each of these two equinox days, right from afternoon onwards, the shadow that it casts will be as if a serpent is moving downwards on the northern staircase. It must be something very significant, this equinox. Also, there are 91 steps on each side, which makes 364, plus the topmost steps makes 365, which is the number of days in a year. And there are 91 steps on each side. And it is 91 days which come between an equinox and a solstice. So there are two equinoxes and two solstices. There are 91 days between them. Brilliant architectural wonder how they have built this. And secondly, the Great Sphinx of Egypt. It is positioned in such a manner that the eyes of the Sphinx looks directly at the rising sun on the day of the equinoxes. The 2 days of the equinoxes in a year, the Sphinx points directly or looks directly into the sun. So some great significance must have been there for these ancients to have done such things, built such wonders. Let's come back to crucifixion. It was mentioned that there is great philosophical meaning in crucifixion. So let us consider this origin of story of Jesus Christ's crucifixion as well as his resurrection and what it could mean. And with that we will stop. What is this crucifixion? Plato gives us a very good idea. He says in the dialogue Phaedo, which is the last dialogue of Socrates. He is in the prison. On that day he is condemned to death. He has to drink poison on that day. So Phaedo and many others come and wish him, and they are all crying, "Oh Socrates, you will leave us and go. What shall we do now?" And all. Socrates, calm, composed, and he starts educating them by saying that it is the body which dies. The soul has neither birth nor death. So he goes through various arguments and proves to all of them, so that at the end of the dialogue everybody is happy, nobody is sad that Socrates is dying. They all happily go back home. Very brilliant dialogue of Plato. There Socrates is made to say that for the true philosopher, he will never feel averse to death when it naturally comes, mind you. Because he sees that the body is a prison of the soul. What we see as Christ being crucified on the cross, in this Socrates is made to say that body is a prison of the soul. And the cleverness of the prison lies in the fact that it uses desires to entice the soul, make it a prisoner of its own accord. The eyes, the ears, the sense, all the senses, all give distorted knowledge to the soul, and soul is not free, it is caught up. just like Christ is nailed on the cross. And look at the cross, the symbol of cross. If you stretch your hands and stand up, it looks like a cross. Right? And the cross, if you open a cube is something that contains any object, right? It contains an object. If you open the cube, you will find there are three faces horizontally and four vertically, and it becomes a cross. So it refers to the cross. Cross refers to the body, which is why Socrates says. So, body is a prison of the soul, and the true philosopher will happily let it go. He knows that through desires and passions, he is tormented actually. It is not, he is not having pleasures in the body actually when he enjoys it. It's actually a torment for the soul. And in that's one thing. That gives some idea of what is crucifixion. Right? Secondly, we find the same idea expressed in Shankara's writing. He says this: a terrible tiger called the mind wanders in the vast forest of sense objects. The mind involved in sense objects is a terrible tiger. Let not the good persons who seek salvation into this sense forest of sense objects. It is the mind which always produces for the jiva the experiences of all sense objects in the gross and subtle form. The distinctions of body, varna, ashrama, caste, qualities, actions, causes and effects are always mind produced. The Atman, which is the jiva here, is pure intelligence unattached to anything in its original form. That's our true nature. Unattached to anything. But look at this. Binding him by the cords of the body, sense organs and vital airs, disabling him from understanding his real nature. The mind leads him up and down with a sense of agency and possession, I and mine, among the objects produced by his action. It says, Aham mameti brahmayatya jasranaha. Mine and thine. So here, actually the idea of bondage which the Socrates speaks of, the prison of the soul, it says you are binding him by the cords of body and the sense and the vital air, disabling him from understanding his true nature. Again, this is crucifixion. Jiva is crucified, or our real nature is crucified on the body of flesh, and the nails which drive into the flesh of Christ and nails him into the cross are our passions. Where does this view come? Where does the story itself, the crucifixion, come from? Age old tradition among the Romans, it was there. They had their god Attis, A-T-T-I-S. And look at the similarities between Attis and what church claims to be Jesus. Look at the similarities. Attis is a Roman god born on December 21st. To Virgin Nana. He was a shepherd. He was also considered the only begotten son. Mind you, all this is pre-Christian, right? And historical records. He was crucified. Of course, story slightly varies there, but crucified, quote unquote, on a tree on a Black Friday. The holy blood that flew from him redeemed the earth. He descends into the underworld after this event of crucifixion, and he is resurrected 3 days later. Don't you see the perfect similarity between this story of Roman Attis and that of Jesus? It seems the cult of Attis used to worship Attis in the following manner. That is, they used to cut a log of pine tree, wrap it in violet, and then with all wailing and sorrow that Attis is dead, they go, this is a ritual, this is a ceremony, they go and bury it in a cave, and then after 3 days they open the cave, the log is missing, and then they say that Attis is resurrected. Perfect similarity between resurrection of Jesus, which the Christian theology speaks of. And prior to this, there is another myth among the Greeks. This was the Roman. Among the Greeks, there is another beautiful myth of Prometheus. Prometheus was a titan, was a god, and he has great love for humanity. And with this great compassion, he steals the fire from the heavenly regions, from the Olympus where Zeus rules. He steals it and gives it to mankind. He gives fire to mankind. So for this mischief, two things is done by Zeus. One is he creates Pandora and leaves it among humanity, such that humanity is always confused and there is always conflict and troubles. On the other hand, for the misdeed of Prometheus, he is given eternal punishment. The punishment is crucifixion in the following manner. Prometheus is punished to be chained to Mount Caucasus, where vultures keep pecking at him and eating his liver during the day. And till when does this punishment go on? Punishment will go on till the time, a prophecy says, till the time his son Hercules comes, slays the vulture and then frees his father. Such a beautiful allegory with profound hidden meaning. Of course, this stealing of fire also is there in Indian mythology of Matarishwan, who steals Agni and then gives it to mankind. Very profound meaning. But look at the similarities again of how the vulture is constantly pecking and eating the liver of Prometheus. What does that mean? Again, it is our passions, lust, anger, greed, which are the vultures which crucify and constantly gnaw and feed at our real self, in the sense that our real self, our divine nature, is completely dormant and paralyzed on this plane. Why? Because our mind and brain is filled and saturated with all wrong notions, with ignorance. Where is the question of light shining when we have shut ourselves in a dark room? And the story also says that the liver is eaten during the day, but at the night it is restored. Look at, again, very meaningful. Why is it restored in the night? The day of the body is a night of the soul. The soul or divine nature cannot work, it's paralyzed when our waking consciousness is such that it's always involved in earthly matters, the body, the taking care of the body, comforts of the body and so on. It's paralyzed. These are the vultures which are constantly eating while we are awake our real nature. It's stifling for our real self. But during the night, when the body is paralyzed, there are no vultures, then the self temporarily frees itself and resurrects to its own plane and enjoys temporary freedom. That's what the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad calls the gold gleaming genius, the swan everlasting. It's tied to the body, but when the body and the senses are in abeyance, for a moment, for some short duration, he goes to his own plane, which in the among the Hindu system is called Sushupti, right? Dreamless state, and then enjoys freedom on his own plane. But his legs are tied back to the body. So as soon as time to wake up comes, he is pulled back and put into the cage. So that's the meaning, you know. Liver is restored during the night. Prometheus' liver is restored during the night to be eaten again in the next stage. Vulture is ready to eat. So it is very beautifully given in the 16th chapter of the Gita, where Krishna says, distinguishes between divine qualities in man as well as demonical qualities in man. Both are there. Our true nature is actually divine, but we are situated in the midst of the body, the senses, the desires, and we get deluded by it. So there are the two selves in us. One is that which is the witness, and then the other which is the involved. Right? He says something interesting here in the 16th chapter. He is speaking of those who have this demonical nature, like demons. We will not read the description of those who are, but we will find a lot of similarities in ourselves and the society which we have built to be certainly demonical. He says, indulging in pride, selfishness, ostentation, power, lust and anger, they detest me who am in their bodies and in the bodies of others. Again, the idea of crucifixion. Detesting of the self within us through all these vultures of selfish ostentation, power, lust, anger, greed. And the story of crucifixion itself you find in the Indian system of Surya. Surya is so bright and shining that his wife Sanjana cannot withstand his brilliance. So she goes away to forest, leaving her image, Chaya. And finally they both come together, but Sanjana's father, who is Vishwakarman, architect of the universe, comes to know of this, and he takes his son-in-law to task, puts him on a lathe, and then cuts off his brilliance. 1/8 of the brilliance of the sun is cut off. Again, the idea of crucifixion, right? And the bits and pieces that fall of this brilliance, he uses to make the Trishul of Shiva, the Chakra of Vishnu, and so on and so forth. Very, very nice stories. Very deeply symbolical also. And he is called, therefore, Vikartana, shorn of effulgence, shorn of brilliance. Surya is called Vikartana. So it all refers to the spiritual sun within us. We are not even aware that we have a divine nature in us, which is why Krishna begins his first teaching to Arjuna. Immediately he plants this idea that don't think you are this body, you are divine. And then onwards he goes on the next 17 chapters, which is an exposition of this one idea actually, of the divinity of self, divinity of man. So that's the idea of crucifixion and resurrection then. What is resurrection? In one sense, if you see, resurrection is the self which neither is born nor dies, but wears the body as the clothes, like we wear the cloth, and we give up the cloth and wear new ones. Similarly, the self takes up the body, gathers experience and gives it up. But is there any death to the self? There is no death. So when we see the body lying of a dead person, we think, oh, he is dead and gone. Like all the friends of the Socrates who were thinking, oh, Socrates will die and leave us and go. Socrates says nothing will happen like that, and don't worry. And in the end of the dialogue, still somebody is not Crito probably, he is not convinced. He said, Socrates, should we bury you or should we burn you? What should we do with you? He says, he laughs at it and says, after all this you still think Socrates is this body. So you do whatever you want with this body, and you do whatever you want to me if you can catch hold of me. That is his real self. You can't catch hold of the real self. It's the body. He leaves the body and goes. So after the death of the body, there is a resurrection, which we all have gone through in our previous lives, which we will go through in the coming few years, where the body is left and all the noble qualities and unselfish feelings, altruistic things and feelings that we have generated is the cream that we take from this life. That's the only real Lakshmi that we can have. Eternal wealth. All other wealth is perishable, in fact delusion. So that's the thing we take, and after the death of the body, this gleaming happens, the cream of the personality is taken, and then he is resurrected in a plane, in a state of consciousness, where we assimilate all these good qualities and make it a part of our being. That's the resurrection. And through these multiple cycles of crucifixion and resurrection, crucifixion, resurrection. Because what happens after that resurrection, after the death of the body? When he has completely assimilated all those experiences, he has to come back to the body again to continue the work that he has left, to fulfill the obligations that he has to others, to do his duties basically. That's why we are all here. And so again he is crucified. Right? So crucifixion, during these cycles of crucifixion, resurrection, finally he is like a bee which gathers honey, nectar from various birds, and finally builds the beehive full of sweet nectar. Right? So in these multiple cycles of bondage and partial liberation, our purpose is to finally reach a place where you are entirely emancipated. And that means, as the Upanishads say, since there is no separateness, Upanishad says that, right? This is to be learnt by the heart, that there is no separateness. It is not individual moksha or liberation or nirvana that is sought after, but the entire liberation of the whole conditioned beings, all beings who are in bondage. This person who has overcome this illusion of separateness starts working for the welfare of all beings. So that is another kind of resurrection, the resurrection which is found in the initiations of the mysteries mentioned in the secret doctrine. But let's stop here, and we can take up any questions.